Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Tuesday, September 2nd. I'm Ray Graff. It's Bird Day. We welcome our favorite bird experts, Rich Guthrie and Julie Hart, to share their knowledge and answer your questions. If you have a question about our winged friends, give us a call. The number is 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. This is a popular program. It amazes me all these years. There are still questions to be asked about birds. Give us a call, 800-348-2551. You can also email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Yeah, it's birds. Rich Guthrie, Julie Hart, and you, 800-348-2551. We'll be back after the news. Did he just call us bird brainiacs? That's not fair. Hello and welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. We are discussing birds today, and we do have some smart people with us. Rich Guthrie is here, and Julie Hart is here. Rich is retired from the New York State DEC and is now the regional reviewer for the premier birding site, eBird. He casts a jaundiced eye on all of your bird sightings. Julie Hart is the project coordinator of the New York Breeding Bird Atlas, which is sort of in data tabulation mode at the time. She coordinates with thousands of volunteers to document bird breeding behaviors. She's got a focus on bird conservation and citizen science. You want to call? You want to get a bird question in? My advice to you is to call now and get in the queue. 800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551. You can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Julie Hart, welcome back to the show.
Hi, good to be here.
Yes, let's hope it's a good one.
Yeah.
Rich Guthrie.
It's a good one.
How do you know?
I declare.
All right. Well, all right. Fair enough. Well, I got to say, you know, it's getting to be close to autumn. And this, to me, and this is subjective, my backyard has had the best season for birds that I think I've ever seen.
Well, Ray, you deserve it. You've been having such a wonderful backyard. They finally got the word out.
It's been great, all of them, and the blue jays are still flitting around. And I saw a hummingbird the other day. It's all good. Julie, what's in your neighborhood right now?
Yeah, we have. It seems like a lot of wood pewees are moving.
I'm
through.
Sorry,
wood pewees.
I don't
right
know.
Now.
I don't know
yeah,
what those
so
are.
Yeah, so they're like probably a lot of people are familiar with phoebes.
Yes.
Eastern phoebes.
Oh, I love the phoebes.
They're related. They're another flycatcher, but they tend to live in the woods, like thicker, deeper woods.
Yeah.
But they seem to be moving through and liking our backyard, so that's kind of cool.
Rich, let's talk about nature and the wonderful cycle of nature. A week or two ago, we're out in the backyard. The wife and I are taking the air, and it happens every year. I don't know if they're little winged ants or whatever.
Oh, yes.
But they all pop up at once.
Indeed, they
okay.
do.
Okay, and this was a week or two ago, and we noticed that there were... I said, God, if the birds were here, they'd have a field day, and there was no bird around.
They're all down at my house having a field day.
Do they hatch at a time when these ants hatch at a time when they know there will be no birds around?
No, the birds know they're hatching, and their timing is scheduled right on top of that.
But our birds were nowhere to be seen.
Well, you're out of luck, Ray. I thought you were doing our things right, but I'm afraid not.
Were you looking up high in the sky, like up? Like for swifts and swallows and stuff?
Maybe. I don't know. I was looking up at the sky. It was blue. I remember that quite
okay.
clearly. And there were a lot of these flying insects briefly for an hour or two, and then they were gone.
Well, the birds go into a frenzy when that goes on. And Julie and I were just at the Pine Bush Preserve in Albany. What a fantastic place. If you haven't been there, I encourage it. But we got out there in the evening with a whole bunch of people looking at the sky. Looking for nighthawks.
Yeah.
And nighthawks are not a hawk. They're actually more crepuscular, come out in the evening and early morning.
Okay.
And they're migrating through now, and their timing is right on top of the ant hatch out, hiving out t- time period.
Well, I think we have smarter ants because they picked the time when all the birds were on break.
Well, they're all busy up at the pine bush and down behind.
You think so?
And then the gulls down by the river. The gulls are funny-looking things. They're in the air trying to catch these bugs in the air, and they're doing bouncing all over the place. They're doing a good job.
And will the wood wee-wee or whatever that is?
Wood pee-wee?
Pee-wee, will they go for those?
Yes.
Yeah, they like
the insects, too. Yeah.
The wood pee-wee gets its name from its call. It sounds like it says its name. Pee-wee.
Yeah.
I tried to whistle pee-wee. It, but the whistle's dry.
All right. Well, do you want some water so you can do the whole show?
Let's see what happens.
All right. Here's an email that came in. It's an interesting one from Amy. The email address is voxpop@wamc.org. The number is 800-348-2551. It's Boyd's. Julie Hart is here. Rich Guthrie is here. Amy writes in, subject heading, birds eating bricks. Help! The birds are literally eating away bricks on my house. Is there anything I can do other than take down the bird feeders? Julie.
My guess is that they're probably going for like spiders and little things, like small insects that are in the crevices.
They're not looking for roughage?
They're not actually going for the stones.
No. Yeah. I agree with you. The bricks tend to hold heat. And the insects are drawn to the heat, and the birds find that out, and they're on it.
Now, wait a minute. Devil's advocate here. Don't the birds need a little bit of stone in the old Gulliver to digest things?
Yes, they do. They most of them will find it in other sources, easier sources than trying to break a brick.
Yeah, they'll go to the ground, usually, to get that grit, yeah.
All right, this is from Peggy. Peggy writes in, hello, I lost my cat a few years ago. I'm sorry. She used to bring her kills, mice, toads, frogs, and birds. Oh, boy, you like that, Rich?
I'm on it.
You like where, going? Now this spring, I had a new visitor who made their mud nest, attaching it to flat area above my light on my covered deck. It was a good spot for these robins, sheltered from direct sun and rain. They raised two broods. It was so cool. I have two questions. One, do I leave the nest alone or remove it? All right, Julie, you handle that one.
I would say you could do either.
She wants them to return.
She wants them to return. They should come back. So if she leaves the nest, they'll probably build on top of it next year.
Yeah.
But if you remove it, they'll probably just rebuild again.
Okay.
And that's probably, it's not quite clear in the literature from studying whether that's better or worse. But the thinking is that if you remove the nest, then you're going to have less parasites on the next brood.
Okay. Second question, Rich, what bird cam do you suggest for this activity? Bird cam.
I understand, and it's hard to say because I do not have one. I have a trail cam.
You don't have a bird cam?
No, I do not.
Come on, man.
I enjoy watching them through my own eyes, and but I do have a trail cam that keeps track of things that come and go out there.
Yeah.
And there's a whole market of those things, and I have no specific recommendation.
What about you, Julie?
I don't have one either, but I know there's a whole bunch of different options.
Now, I'm sure I don't get the whole nuance, but if you turn the trail cam toward the nest, then it becomes a bird cam, right?
It does.
Yes.
And I have mine at times aimed towards the feeders, and the thing is, it does keep track of what goes on there. Now, my good neighbor has an excellent feeder cam catches all the birds and alerts him when a bird shows up. I'm afraid I don't know what make or model it is, but I know it is. He gets a great deal of it, and his wife get a great deal of enjoyment out of it. So if you like that sort of thing, do a little research, and maybe next time I'll come up with some recommendations.
Mm. You know, it occurs to me that with AI being so prevalent now, you could have a bird cam set up to software that would identify the bird, and you'd get an alert. You'd say, a blue-footed booby's over here.
I think that exists,
that's out there.
The feeder ones. Yeah.
You know,
it's like iBird photo or it's iSomething.
Really?
There's one.
It ain't cheap, but it is kind of entertaining. And you know, if you really, I get a kick out of seeing people's reactions to it, and I don't discourage it. If you can do it, do it.
You know, I'm really tired of having great ideas that have already happened. You know what I mean?
Sorry.
It's really disheartening.
Burst your bubble.
Yeah. By the way, did anybody win the big lottery yesterday? I forgot to get a ticket.
I didn't check. Maybe I did.
It was $1.1 billion.
Yeah, I know.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's actually, no, it's gone up.
Oh, so nobody won?
You still have another chance.
This is great. My ship is going to come in. Let's take a break. 800-348-2551. It's Birds today. Julie Hart, Rich Guthrie, your calls coming up. Sonny Rollins, Blues for Philly Joe here on Vox Pop. Ray Graff with you. It's Birds today. 800-348-2551 is the number. Rich Guthrie and Julie Hart join us to answer your questions. Ernie from Scotia writes in, it was great to meet Rich and Julie at the Pine Bush Nighthawk Watch. I actually saw two Nighthawks flying at Fisher Ferry Sunday at 11:15 a.m. How uncommon is seeing them during the day?
I think during migration, it's possible. Like, it's not extremely unusual, but most of them we do tend to see at dusk. Is that what you'd say, Rich?
Yeah, I agree. They're moving through now. And the thing about Nighthawks I want to mention is that their numbers have decreased drastically over the years. It was a great joy years ago to take the kids into a downtown, let's say Catskill, New York, or Saugerties, New York, Albany, New York, and hear the Nighthawks overhead. It's not so anymore. They've kind of abandoned our area. And the reasons why are still somewhat mysterious, but very concerning.
Well, you know, go ahead.
I was just going to say, part of it is that we don't have those roofs with rocks on the top anymore.
The pebble roofs.
Oh. Yeah, that's where they used to nest in a lot of cities, like Albany.
Pebble rock? I don't even know what that is. I don't.
There was a standard roof style was to put flat pea pebbles on the roof.
Really?
Yes. Yeah. It evaporated the water efficiently, and many of the roofs were flat, so that was a concern.
Wow. Okay. Mm-hmm. You know how I get a little annoyed when people send pictures in, right? It's just you can't really show them on the radio unless I put it on the webpage, but during the show, how can I do that? But this one is such a magnificent photo that I'm not upset. This is a Cooper's Hawk Immature. In Canaan, New York, taken yesterday. And look at this artistic shot. There's a bird sitting on a thing with a sign that says exit. Isn't that beautiful?
Yes.
It's got the message.
I love that shot. I might have to steal this. Thank you for that one. P, just P. 800-348-2551 is the number. Charlie's in Half Moon. Hello.
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 Yes. Good afternoon. Good afternoon. This is Charlie in Half Moon. Right. Always great to hear you guys on the Bird Show.
Thank you.
I have a quick question about hummingbirds because it's a great time of season to see the hummingbirds flying south right now. Every time on the internet or in ads, when you see a picture of a hummingbird feeder, there's always a cluster of hummingbirds, three, four, or even more hummingbirds around. However, here, whenever I see more than one hummingbird, they chase each other away. Why is that?
Well, it's a different species of hummingbird they're putting up there. The hummingbirds that occur out west USA and Canada, they are gregarious, and you'll see 5, 10, 15, 20 at an adequate feeder. And you're right about our eastern ruby-throated hummingbirds. They are very territorial and not very pleasant company for one another.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess so. And by the way, I agree with you. I'd rather watch the birds in person than use a bird cam to watch them.
Okay.
But yeah. Yep. Fair okay, enough. Well, thanks a lot.
Another vote in favor of us.
Thanks a lot. The number here is 800-348-2551, and it's Birds today with Julie Hart and Rich Guthrie. And let's go to Jay in Huntington. Jay, you're on.
Hello. I heard just recently that the black oil sunflower seeds really attract bear. They smell and bear pick that up a long way. So I was thinking this year of using other seed. What would you recommend? I live in the woods in the Berkshires.
So yeah, they do love black oil sunflower, but they also love Niger or thistle seed. They also love suet. They love peanuts. They love the hummingbird nectar that you put out. So my recommendation is, if you have bears in the area, which most likely you do, most people in the listening area do, is to take those feeders in at night. So you can put them out during the day and then take them in at night.
Rich, won't birds, the bears love all those things Julie just mentioned?
Absolutely. No, I don't think there's an alternative that you can turn a bear away from. Mm-hmm. So the other possibility is to put a feeder high up where they can't access it. And with luck, you won't get one of those really agile bears that will tightrope their way out to the feeder.
Yeah. All right. Jay, thanks a lot. Now, if you did that, if you put a bird feeder way up, would it just annoy the bears? Would it come around and become vexed and destroy something?
Probably not. I mean, if it's not easy access, they're just going to keep moving on and find another neighbor.
All right. The number here is 800-348-2551. Let's go to Barbara in Albany. Barbara, you're on with Julie Hart and Rich Guthrie.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, go
Certainly.
Ahead.
Yes.
Okay, so Charlie asked my question about hummingbird
Darn
behavior.
It.
Why do our hummingbirds here, the ruby-throated, attack each other, and the ones in the Southwest just kind of all gang around? Mm-hmm. So I'm going to ask a follow-up question to
okay,
that.
Okay, great.
For the ruby-throated, doesn't that behavior interfere with their, mating?
That's a great question.
Because, it's a delicate question.
Yeah, you will see, the males are extremely defensive of a stable, reliable food source. So you'll see during the summer months, during the breeding season, you'll see males actively chasing females away. And they'll do that even to
right.
ones that they've mated with in their area. And so I would say yes, in a way, it keeps that female from that really easy place to get food, but she's probably going to other natural sources in the area.
Rich.
Okay.
Yeah, those males, they're not very nice guys.
Really?
No, they're not. They're very not nice.
Yeah.
No, I agree.
Wow.
I will add, though, the Rufus hummingbird out west is also quite a bit of a bully. I've worked out west, and if you have Rufus around, then they will also scare away all of the black-chinned and all the other guys, too. So there are some bullies.
Seems counterproductive.
Yeah, spunky little things, aren't they?
I've met some of them in bars, I think.
Hey, now. Well done.
Yes.
On that happy note, we'll let you go, Barbara. Thank you. 800-348-2551 is the number. Everyone's a comedian. It's Vox Pop and it's Birds Today with Rich Guthrie on Julie Hart. And let's go to our buddy in Argyle, our man in Argyle. It's Merle. Hello, Merle. Not there.
Hello, Merle.
Hey, Merle, what it is? Come on, let's go.
Oh,
Merle. All right, if you call back, that's
he's always there.
I know. Merle's a regular. He's our correspondent in Argyle. All right, let's go to Angela in Albany. Angela, you're on.
Hi. My question is, I saw a bird back in June who covered my sister's windshield with its wings. It was huge. And I said, don't panic. Looks like a vulture or a condor, but I'm thinking more of a vulture. It was ugly, but the body was beautiful in the wings. It was about camel colored with rounded edges. And he had a prey, a small bird in its talons, landed on someone's front lawn to have his lunch. So what kind of a bird would that be?
A
raptor of some sort.
Quite a description.
Yeah, well, it's not a vulture, I'll say that. So more than likely a big raptor that would take a small prey like that would be a red-tailed hawk in our area. I'd say probably the likely candidate. Vultures do not carry...
Okay, it wasn't red, though. It was camel-colored, brown.
Yeah, that's okay. The young
Light
ones are
brown.
Not red. Mm-hmm. The young ones all have that brown coloration on it. And they would be foolish enough to take a food and bring it towards a car. They, you know, the older ones know better. So, yeah, vultures do not carry food with them. They'll eat right. where it's at, mainly because it's not going to go anywhere.
Because they
carrion. So you think
carrion.
This is what it's kind been of a dead. Bird? A hawk?
Red-tailed hawk, I would suggest. They're big. They're the color you described. Mm-hmm. And they are quite frequently next to roadways and open areas next to highways. So, and
but the head looked more like a vulture. There were no feathers on the head. It was thin head, and mm-hmm. it was just plain ugly, period. It looked more like either some kind of vulture or the small, skinny head of a condor or something, but it was awful.
Oh my God, it was a mutant. And so, Angela, Julie's got something for you.
There's a small chance it could have been a black vulture, which do sometimes actively kill prey. I don't know if they carry it very far, but they will kill things.
They do. The black vulture will, but they don't have the mechanism for carrying things unless they carry it in a beak, and I've never seen them do that.
Yeah.
Wow, this is a good one, Angela.
Yeah.
But he's brown, like I said, and camel colored with rounded loops at the end of its wing.
Could this be an outlier? Could this be a rarity?
The odds are no.
Yeah, it's not likely.
Hmm.
Wow.
Vultures are known to eat dead things, yeah.
Well, Angela, we'll see if any of our other listeners have seen such a thing, but thank you for the call. 800-348-2551. You know, I saw Merle pop up again on the screen, and now he's gone again.
Oh, no.
So I think
it's bad connection.
Something's happening with Merle. Merle, we miss you, man. It's only been a couple shows since you've been on. We forgot what you sound like. Kathy and Seward. Kathy, you're on.
Hi, I got another hummingbird question.
Sure.
And I'm wondering, I've been feeding them, and they do hang around here. I've also got they seem to love a fuchsia plant, mm-hmm. as well as a feeder out on my porch. And I probably should stop feeding them at some point so they can start their progress south and not lure them back here. Is that right?
No, keep feeding them. They know when to go, and they will even... With a full feeder, they'll turn their back to it and head south. And meanwhile, you'll be fattening them up and giving them the energy to make the trip.
Great. That's really good news. Thank you so much.
Thanks a lot. Julie, is there any danger in overfeeding too long a bird that's moving through? Birds are smart enough to...
Yeah, they're going to go based on the day length or the weather and when there's a wind and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. They get antsy and they need to fly. I would say with hummingbirds, you want to keep feeding until probably even into the middle of October.
Really?
I say
because
November.
November, for really? You mm-hmm. say? Yeah. I mean, our ruby-throateds are on the move right now. People are probably seeing a lot more migrants right now. But we'll start to get some of those wayward travelers from other parts of the country.
Yeah.
So it's a good time to keep those feeders up.
And that's a shame for those of us who just use natural bee balm and everything else, because by the time these wayward travelers come through, all of that stuff's
flowers,
gone.
Flowers, yeah.
Well, there are some very interesting late-blooming flowers that you can use. I know there's one, the pineapple sage. I don't know if it's hardy enough in this area, but that's one that's used a little further south in New York and Massachusetts and Connecticut, where it'll bloom. It'll stay blossomed right into early winter.
Yeah.
And late-moving hummingbirds find it. It's a nice plant food source.
Okay. The number here is 800-348-2551. Email is voxpop@wamc.org. We'll get back to the email bag in a little bit. But let's go to Woodstock. I guess it's hummingbird day on the show. Rick, you're on. Go ahead.
Hello, Ray. Hello everybody. Hi. Yes, it's the hummingbird show. Welcome to the hummingbird show. So I have a nice big pollinator patch with butterfly bushes and bee balm and anise hyssop and pineapple sage, among others. But I also have two hummingbird feeders, and they're always pretty active. But the other night I saw something I've never seen before. A little downy woodpecker was poking around and hopped onto the hummingbird feeder, and there were no hummingbirds around.
And within about 5 seconds, there were eight. I counted eight hummingbirds dive bombing this poor little woodpecker.
Aww.
And when it came back about a half an hour later, the same thing happened again. I've never seen more than two or three hummingbirds at the feeders.
Wow.
There was eight the first time, maybe six a second. And they were like a swarm. And, of course, we were trying to have dinner about 6 feet away on the deck. It was pretty hysterical. Do they communicate with each other to do that, or is it just all instinct that they all see the woodpecker and want to get rid of it? Because they seem like an army. It seemed almost coordinated.
Well, yes. They do not communicate with each other, but they do keep an eye on each other. And they'll react to others' behavior and take the initiative on their own. And it could all be simultaneous. And that poor downy woodpecker learned a lesson. But you know what? He'll be back. And
all I could think of was the Marvel movie Ant-Man, you know, the way they were backing up and then zooming towards him over and over. I was, where's Paul Rudd when we need him? Anyway, okay, so it is, they're not teaming up. It's just they're all simultaneously doing the same thing.
Yes, mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right, thanks, Rick. I appreciate it. Now, you said they don't communicate, Rich.
Right.
How do you know?
Well, I don't know for certain.
Aha!
Well, some birds will communicate back and forth, but hummingbirds, being the nature of the beast, should I say, is that... they're really not all that cooperative. They're more competitive with one another. Some of the other birds are more cooperative, and they will cluster up on a potential threat, like the red-winged blackbirds or tree swallows. If you go near their nest, they'll come around and bother you.
Uh-huh.
But not so much with hummingbirds. They're kind of like loners. And I'm a little intrigued by that report that they more than two actually showed up at one time.
Hmm.
But it is what it is. And I guess a downy woodpecker brings it on.
You know, apparently. I just thought of this, Julie. Do hummingbirds have songs?
They do not have songs.
They do not make any sound.
They just hum.
They make a little squeaking sound. They do. And then different hummingbirds make different sounds with their tail feathers when they're doing their courtship flights.
But it's not the wings that make that sort of...
Yeah, they have a buzz. And the one out west,
has a
metallic sound. It's really fascinating.
Really?
It sounds like little zips of lightning.
Really?
Yeah.
And so why, what in the physiology of the western hummingbird it doesn't have presumably metal wings. I mean,
no.
What is it about it?
It's just the configuration of the primary feathers on the wing or the tail that create that sound. But it's really neat to listen to zing, mm-hmm. zing, zing,
huh.
zing. And they're the ones that gather in numbers, so you're hearing this left, right, and all over.
Can you make that sound again?
Zing, zing, zing.
All right, that's not enough. Let's go to Great Barrington, and Diane, you're on.
Oh, hi. Yeah, I bought a 40-pound bag of black oil sunflower seeds 2 years ago. I didn't use it, kept it in the garage. I'm wondering, will that be healthy to put out for the birds this year?
Probably. If it's not palatable, they won't eat it. They know better. It's like a glass of sour milk. You'll just turn it down. But there's a good chance that it has little bugs in it now, and that's a nice source of protein for those guys.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. It's never been opened, and it's sealed in brown paper.
Oh, it don't matter. They're in there.
How do the bugs get in if it's sealed up?
Well, back when they picked the flower with the seeds off the plant.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Just the same thing that happens
so that
with
goes way
our
back.
Food.
Oh, really? It happens with our food, too? I'll never eat again. Diane, thanks a lot. The number here is 800-348-2551. It's Birds Today, Julie Hart, and Rich Guthrie. Let's grab one more before the next break, and then we'll hit the email bag, and then we'll go back to the phones. Let's go to Florida, Massachusetts. John, you're on.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yep, go ahead.
Okay, I had a comment about something I saw on Route 100 by Stamford, Vermont. There's a lot of long straightaways, and when I was coming down one of those long straightaways, I saw a raven. And have you ever heard of a raven taking live prey?
Interesting. Julie, have you ever heard of that?
Live prey.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think they do occasionally. Yeah, not as common.
What do they eat?
Yes.
Bugs?
Oh, no. They'll grab what they find a chipmunk that's not paying attention. It's a dinner.
But that's just a big crow, right?
They can handle it. I mean, they're not going to go over their size. They're not going to get over their head in this thing.
I've never witnessed anything like this before. It was a full-grown gray squirrel he had.
Wow.
And I thought he was in carrion. I thought it was a dead squirrel or something. And when I approached it with my vehicle, as I got closer, the raven freaked out and took off, and the gray squirrel ran away.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
Like, he looked like he was completely unscathed.
Holy moly, that's quite a story.
It is. That's too bad. I don't know. Good for the squirrel, not so good for the raven. Good for you.
So wait, you were about to say too bad you didn't?
Yes,
you did that?
I was going to say, yeah, too bad.
You know what? You have a
raven
problem.
Would have scored.
All right, John, we have to talk this out during the break. We'll take a break now. 800-348-2551. Rich Guthrie is here. Julie Hart is here. It's Birds. We'll be back. James Cotton, Blues for the Hook here on Vox Pop. Ray Graff with you, 800-348-2551. It's Birds today. Julie Hart at Rich Guthrie. The email bag is open at voxpop@wamc.org. And let's grab a couple of those before we go back to the phones. This one's from Brent. We have a large wooded property, and we've seen bald eagles around, but yesterday we saw two that appeared to be fighting in midair. Is that a sign there's a nest around? I know they're territorial. Could that be a little eagle loving? You, Julie Hart, follow breeding birds. What do you think?
Yeah, I would say if it wasn't at this time of year, then yes, probably that is similar to what they do for courtship.
Yeah.
This time of year, you've got the young birds from the nest that out, and they're starting to fly around, and they tend to play quite a bit.
Ah, so it's
as
just
well.
Playing? Yeah.
So it's probably just the young ones playing and trying to figure out how to fly and maneuver and catch things and that kind of stuff. But then once we get into the winter months, then if you start seeing that with adult eagles, then that's courtship.
Aha.
Yeah.
In winter?
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
So that's when the courtship happens for eagles?
Yes. They start like working on their nests in December, and then January, February, they're doing lots of courtship, and they start laying eggs in probably late February, March.
Go figure.
So, yeah.
Interesting. The number here is 800-348-2551. Rich, Steve, Mike writes in, we had catbirds in our backyard all summer here in Saratoga. Do they typically return to the same spot each year to raise their young? They're fun birds to have around, and that's from Mike in Saratoga Springs, and I agree with Mike. They are fun to have
around. I agree with
Mike,
and I agree with you, Ray.
Yeah.
Yeah, they are neat birds. You know how I like catbirds.
Yeah.
And, they'll likely come right back to where they were. If it worked for them, they'll be back. And if you're kind to them, they'll remember you. I mean, my catbirds will come up onto my porch when I'm sitting there. And
your Dr. Doolittle, you're a special case, okay? Let's face it.
They're there. And, when I come out the door, all these critters, like, seek me out. And they know they're in for an easy touch.
I like the catbirds. And so when do they leave town? Are they gone?
No, not yet. But they'll be leaving soon, right? Later this month, I would say. There's a few that'll hang around all year, even into December, but most of them will leave.
This is from Marty in Hadley, who's wondering if a juvenile red-tailed hawk can recover from a possible mouse poisoning. Oh, we had a resident hawk which landed in our yard and was clearly unwell, couldn't walk or fly. We called our local rehab guy, who said it was possibly poisoned. Will it recover, and would they relocate it back to us or another location?
So the rehabber took the bird? Maybe?
It doesn't say.
If they took the bird, then I would say it has a better chance of surviving, because then they can try to counter some of that poison. If it was left on its own in the wild, then probably slim chances.
What that rat poison does is... It prevents the blood from coagulating, and any bird or animal will just die of internal bleeding.
Oh.
And it is as long and unfortunate. Don't use those. There are some safe rodent measures that are out there, and I highly recommend them. I'm totally against any of these poisonous materials that are being used.
Mm-hmm. Let's go. We'll grab a couple of more emails, and then we'll go back to the phones. This is from Jeffrey in Coxsackie. I have a lot of honeybees and black ants that love to drink my hummingbird food. Do these deter the hummingbirds from feeding at the feeder?
Oh, no, I've seen the hummingbirds go right after those. The hummingbirds go right after the yellow jackets and honeybees. So, yeah, they just pester them.
What about the ants?
Yeah, they're fine with the ants. Yeah. Yep.
You know, would the hummingbirds eat a nice, delicious, nectar-covered ant?
They might, yeah. They feed their young, actually, insects because their young need protein to grow. So that'd be a good prey for them.
Remember the email we had about the bird cam? Peggy writes in. I don't know if this is the same person or not, but it was a while ago. Peggy says, I'm assuming a bird cam is non-invasive. I don't want to disturb or frighten them by stepping up to see into their nest. So I figured this is a natural way of observing without interfering. Is that true, the bird cam?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, mostly true.
Okay.
They may pay attention if you have one of these things that actually clicks when it takes a photo.
Yeah.
And some of them do. I don't know why. But and it'll get their attention, but they get over that.
All right. This is interesting. Rick writes, I recently got a bird feeder with a sunken-in camera, and every time a bird, or mostly squirrels, pop up in front of it, it alerts my phone, and if the bird stays long enough, the camera will identify the bird. And the bonus is, I mounted it on my shed, and it comes with a 4x6 solar panel that keeps it powered. I've seen some really colorful birds face-to-face.
Nice. And I want to say, up in Maine, there was an incredible incident where the first record of a very colorful flycatcher, the Vermilion flycatcher, was caught only by one of these bird cams, one of these cameras, and it documented something that would have gone totally unnoticed.
Wow. I mean, what's special about the Vermilion flycatcher? Are they not from around here?
No. They are, Texas? And
Arizona, Texas, Mexico, right on down.
What part of Maine?
This was up in Bar Harbor.
Oh, what pretty good.
Way up there.
Yeah, about that? Okay. Last email for now, and then we'll hit the phones. This is from Rich in Pittstown. We live in Pittstown, yes, and have a trio of hummingbirds that seem incredibly playful. I assume they're siblings. They fly all around and through our covered porch and stop to look at us. It's absolutely delightful.
I agree. They are delightful, and they are curious and trusting. They'll come within arm's reach of you.
But they don't like each other, and they're mean, right? Is that what I'm getting?
In between, yeah, I guess.
You know, that's so funny. One of the hummingbirds, I don't know if it's just one or there are many, but hanging out on my patio under an overhang, there'll be one that comes up eye level to me and just hovers and just looks. Yes. It's the craziest thing, like a foot away.
Mine does that, especially when the feeder is empty or running low.
Or if you're wearing like a bright red hat or a pink hat or something, then they'd like to come up to you.
Really?
Wear a pink hat.
No?
No.
even if you're on a march or something? No?
Might then, yes.
Gracie in Sheffield writes in, a raven had his eye on our Wally, our little Yorkie, about a 4-pounder, and a red-eyed hawk buzzed within 5 feet of her in the 20-foot space between our house and our garage. She was on a short lease. A leash. Look at that. Isn't that a beautiful dog?
Yes.
I bet a bird would find that dog delicious, right?
Exactly, yeah.
And you know what? Rich wouldn't even care.
Ah, wait a minute.
He wouldn't even care. All right, let's go to the phones again. It's Teresa, or is it Teresa in Albany? You're on.
Hi.
Hi.
I've been enjoying the hummingbirds fighting in my backyard all morning.
Aren't we lucky to have them?
But the reason... I know, they're so cute. I have flowers. I plant special flowers that I know they like, so I don't put out a feeder because I don't trust myself to change the water, and it's dangerous if you don't change it. But anyway, I'm calling because you mentioned that vultures don't carry their prey around, And I had an experience with a, I always call them buzzards, with a vulture that brought a dead possum into my backyard and was chowing down on it. And I have a couple of cats, and I don't let them out by themselves. I go out with them, and I watch them, and they play for a while, and then they always want to come back in. They go out for like 10, 15 minutes. Well, yeah. I was out there with my cats, and here's this vulture chowing down on a possum. And this, my cats were kind of young at the time, and my little black one, his name is Miles, he thought, well, I'm going to go after that vulture. So he took off, and the vulture left, and left the ugly possum,
delicious.
In my yard.
Looks like the cat won.
And I was like, oh, come on, he brought him in. Why can't he come back?
Yeah, take him out.
Take him out.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the next day, boom, there he is back again.
Oh,
and I'm thinking, oh, he's going to take it with him. No, he doesn't take it with him. I didn't have my cat with me. But he did come back the next day and chowed down on it again. And then the third day, no bird.
Oh, Granny?
So, I'm on the phone, honey. So anyway, my grandson. So anyway, we had to dispose of the possum, unfortunately. But he did bring it into my yard. And it was a big possum.
Wow.
Well, that's nice. Congratulations on the dead possum, ma'am.
Oh, yeah, and you win.
And hello to your grandchild, and thank you for calling. 800-348-2551 is our number. It's Birds Today, Julie Hart and Rich Guthrie. And we'll go to Helena in Amherst. Hello, Helena.
Hi there. I just want to know, I have a hummingbird feeder, but I would like to plant some flowers or something that would attract them. And the other thing is I'm wondering what other kinds of plants could I put in that would attract birds.
Wow, that's a large question.
All right,
but let's start with some easy. So, you know, we generally recommend native plants, and there's a whole suite of things that are really helpful in this area. But if we start with just hummingbirds, then I would say what you mentioned, pineapple, sage, Rich.
Pineapple, sage, and some of the other sages and the like. Any of these colorful red flowers and
scarlet runners, salvia.
What I would recommend is go online and check out the American Bird Conservancy website or the National Audubon Society, you'll find a whole list particular to your region that are recommended. And the list is long, and there are many options that are out there, colorful, beneficial plants.
Oh, well, good.
And
that's terrific. Good to know.
And you'll want to also try to, like, see if you can get bushes that have berries on them.
They'll hold
over the winter, because then you're providing food for the whole year. And there's a lot of birds that are just like really hungry and searching for.
But hummingbirds won't go for the red hummingbirds, berries, right?
But the other birds will.
Interesting. Yeah. Well, good luck, Helena. That's a lot of fun. Go ahead.
Yeah. Yeah. I have a question about feeding the birds over the winter. Is that, I've heard people say don't put feeders out in the summer because of bears and stuff like that. But what about during the winter?
I'll feed them. Go ahead and put the feeders out. After the bears have gone to hibernation, a safe bet that you can put the feeders out and the overwintering birds will enjoy being there for you.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, thanks a lot for the call. Now, listen, we've been waiting for this the whole show. Merle is finally back in Argyle. Merle, what happened? You're on.
I need a 10-year-old to tell me how to fix my
Go ahead, man. You're right.
Anyway, I'm on the landline. So now I heard it on NPR. So it's got to be fake news. So I'm asking the experts. The expert said that the birds are showing signs that they are getting up earlier and eating earlier in the day. Have you guys heard anything about that?
Well, it depends on the bird species, and some birds may be true. That may be some of our southern birds that have expanded their range northward. But for the most part, birds pretty well stick to their natural clock.
NPR said it was their natural clock is going earlier. They're getting up earlier and feeding earlier.
Well,
so somebody must have done a study on it.
They must have, yeah. I haven't seen this study.
Well, our bird experts aren't aware of this, Merle, and so, you know, we're not sure.
At least I got on. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot, man. You know, a lot of the older birds, they have to get up and go to the bathroom at least once in the middle of the night, right?
And some of them get up and sing through the night. Isn't that wonderful?
Yeah, that's wonderful. All right, let's go to Albany, and it's Sharon's turn. Hello, Sharon.
Hi. We have a camp up Putnam Station, Washington County. And since 1958, we have heard whippoorwills at dusk. We've never heard them anywhere else, and people that we bring up to the camp have never heard whippoorwills. Are whippoorwills anywhere else besides up there?
Actually, you know, that's an interesting question because there is kind of like a separation in their population in our area where in the lower elevations and lower latitudes, whippoorwills are hard to find. But you start getting up there into the foothills of the Adirondacks and Lake Champlain. I know I was at a camp on Tongue Mountain. And whippoorwills were left, right, and all over.
Huh.
So you're on to something there, Sharon. And I'd like to have an atlas map of the whippoorwill distribution in New York.
Why'd you look at Julie?
Like.
Does Julie have one on her? Do you have the map?
Yes. We've been doing nightjar surveys the last 5 years as well, and having volunteers go all over the state and submitting data for wherever they hear whippoorwills or nighthawks or chuckwills widows. As you said, they're declining very rapidly in the state. There's still a few hawks.
And as far as I know, Tongue Mountain is right over the mountain from where our camp is, so that would make sense.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Yeah, that seems to be a cluster zone for them, and I can't speak for other parts of the state, but yeah, I think you're correct there, Sharon. That's
cool.
A good observation.
Tongue Mountain, huh? Is
it yes, sir.
Near Uvula Mountain, by any chance? Marty writes in, I live in Albany, somewhat near the campus. We only have about a minute here. Somewhere near the campus of SUNY Albany. I watch the birds in my yard contribute to eBird if something cool comes through. I had the window open this morning. Heard a call I was not familiar with. I immediately grabbed my phone, turned on Merlin for sound, looked for something unusual. Merlin came back with indigo bunting. I have never had one in my yard, so I was curious if it even seems plausible, and are we starting migration already?
Very likely, in fact. Indigo bunting is native to our area. I don't know if it indicates that it was singing or calling. Merlin can pick up either of the two. They have a distinctive song. Unlikely this time of year, but the call is readily identifiable, and I believe it. And they are migrating through
they
right now.
They are migrating.
Yeah, have you seen one, Julie?
I haven't seen one this fall.
No? What are they? They're indigo? I mean, I don't know if I've ever seen one.
They're beautiful
brilliant
blue.
Purple
really?
Color.
Really?
They're iridescent purple. They're really beautiful birds. Yeah. Well, the males are purple. The females are just
how big
brown.
Are they? Are they small, teeny
little
birds?
Smaller than a sparrow.
Yeah. Yep.
They're slightly smaller than a sparrow and certainly larger than a hummingbird.
Interesting.
About and goldfinch size.
You know, yellowfinch different than a goldfinch?
Probably yes. Goldfinch is real. Yellowfinch isn't.
Okay. Well, we've seen plenty of those around our backyard this year, and they're striking as well. I mean, they're beautiful.
Definitely.
All right. So, Rich Guthrie, if people want to get in touch with you, how do they do it?
Simply use my name, Richard P. as in Peter Guthrie. No dots, no dashes, no slants, no lines. Okay. RichardPGuthrie@gmail.com.
And Julie Hart.
Julie.Hart@dec.ny.gov.
Well, you two are fantastic. We will see you next month. Support comes from Daughters of Sarah, Albany, New York, providing a continuum of care for seniors, offering them opportunities to live and age gracefully with dignity and respect. DaughtersofSarah.org. The Tang Teaching Museum and Art Gallery at Skidmore College, providing exhibits, public events, and educational programs for audiences in the Capital District and beyond. Skidmore.edu/Tang. and Congregation Gates of Heaven, Schenectady's oldest Jewish congregation, now registering students in Gates Quest and offering tickets to members of the community for all High Holy Days, cgoh.org for more information. Thanks again to Rich and Julie for being here. Thank you for listening. Thanks for calling. Thanks for emailing. Apologies if we didn't get to your question. These two are back first Tuesday of the month. We'll see them then. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Ed Rosen screened the calls. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, we'll get out of Dodge. It's Travel with Gene Gagnon. We'll see you tomorrow at 2:00.